Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery. Hello, snack lovers. Curb your cravings with My Mochi ice cream. Imagine a scoop of rich, creamy, premium ice cream in your favorite flavor. Now imagine that scoop wrapped up in the sweetest, softest dough known to mankind. That's My Mochi ice cream. Sweet, chewy, cool, and creamy, all in one bite. It's quite possibly the most joyfully chill sensation you've ever had in your life. My Mochi ice cream comes in tons of fabulous flavors, like strawberry, mango, cookies and cream, and double chocolate. Each box of My Mochi ice cream has 6 perfectly portioned mochis that are about 80 calories each, and it's also gluten-free. You can find My Mochi at Target or visit MyMochi.com to find a grocery store near you. That's MyMochi.com. Discover the joyfully chill sensation of My Mochi ice cream today.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. On today's show, Seth interviews Lewis Black, who then takes a few more questions backstage just for this podcast. But first, a closer look.
Every day, Donald Trump continues to prove that he's an increasingly erratic president who's unfit for his job, and now he's apparently working even fewer hours and neglecting urgent issues. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. Since the publication of Fire and Fury, the explosive book about his first year in the White House, President Trump has been battling the growing impression that even his closest aides believe him to be dangerously unfit for office. And they obviously have a very strong case, since Trump knows virtually nothing about the job. But you would think that a man who ran on a platform of pure patriotism and who spent months lecturing athletes about respecting the national anthem would at the very least know the words to the anthem. And yet, Trump seemed lost as he tried to sing along to the anthem before last night's National College Football Championship. Oh, my God. Trump sings the national anthem the way the rest of us sing Despacito. Despacito. Seriously, how can you be president and not know the words to the national anthem? That's like Peyton Manning not knowing the words to the Nationwide jingle. Nationwide is some. Now, just 2 weeks into the new year, Trump faces a series of urgent tasks that deserve every ounce of his attention. From keeping the government open to protecting DACA recipients to fully funding the Children's Health Insurance Program to providing electricity to millions of Puerto Ricans who are still without it. And yet, he's apparently spending even less time working than he did before. The website Axios obtained Trump's private schedule, not the public ones that his staff puts out, and found that President Trump is starting his official day much later than he did in the early days of his presidency, often around 11 a.m., and holding far fewer meetings. This is largely to meet Trump's demands for more executive time, which almost always means TV and Twitter time alone in the residence. Sorry. He starts his day at 11 a.m.? Is he the president or a lunch waiter at Olive Garden? All I do is make fun of him, and I still have to be here at 9 a.m. Just take Trump's private schedule. From this week is an example of how little he works. On Tuesday, Trump has his first meeting of the day at 11 a.m. He then has executive time for an hour, followed by an hour lunch in the private dining room. Then it's another 1 hour, 15 minutes of executive time, followed by a 45-minute meeting, then another 15 minutes of executive time before ending his official day at 4:15 p.m. On Thursday, the president has an especially light schedule. Policy time at 11 a.m., then executive time at 12 p.m., then lunch for an hour, then more executive time from 1:30 p.m. Oh, my God, Trump might be our first president who works so little he technically qualifies for unemployment. It's like Trump isn't even the president. He's more like Mike Pence's out-of-work friend who has to crash with him for a while till he gets back on his feet. He's the Dupree of the White House. Deep cut. It's a deep cut. Trump, of course, not only defers all major policymaking to his staff and Republicans in Congress, he's also so fragile and erratic that he needs those same people to go on TV and lavish praise on him, as senior policy advisor Stephen Miller did on Sunday in this now infamous interview with CNN anchor Jake Tapper.
The reality is the president is a political genius who won against a field of 17 incredibly talented people, who took down the Bush dynasty, who took down the Clinton dynasty. All these so-called political geniuses in Washington, whether it be at the big lobbying firms or
the only person who's called himself a genius in the last week is the president. But
which happens to be a true statement.
Okay.
A self-made billionaire who revolutionized reality TV and who has changed the course of our politics.
He's watching and he's happy that you said that.
I would be with the president on a campaign plane with a rally in 20 minutes, and he would be able to.
You've already made this point, Stephen.
He'd be able to come up with material.
Yeah, you've already said that.
A self-made billionaire revolutionized reality TV and tapped into something magical that's happening in the hearts of this country.
Ugh. I'd say Stephen Miller has a boner, but he already is one. Seriously, he looks like someone slapped a couple of googly eyes on a penis. Seriously, is there anyone creepier than Stephen Miller? He wasn't born, he just appeared after someone read an Edgar Allan Poe story into a cracked mirror. Also, can we go back to the first part of that clip for a second?
The president is a political genius who won against a field of 17 incredibly talented people, who took down the Bush dynasty, who took down the Clinton dynasty.
There's nothing worse than someone who pronounces it dynasty. Miller claims he's in touch with the working class, but he pronounces words like a British dandy. What's next? You're gonna tell us Trump checks his mobile for his schedule so he can have some privacy during his leisure time? To borrow a phrase Stephen Miller might use, Stephen Miller is a wanker. With googly eyes. Obviously with googly eyes. Also, can I just say, I'm tired of this talking point. Trump and his toadies keep repeating that he beat a field of 17 incredibly talented people. He did not. Let's not forget the field he ran against included a narcoleptic, a malfunctioning robot, a sentient butter sculpture, and a guy who was almost suffocated by his own hoodie. And when Trump's sycophants aren't available to go on TV and stroke his ego, Trump does it himself. Yesterday, he flew to Tennessee to sign an executive order and speak to the American Farm Bureau. And at one point, he needlessly lashed out at the media and told the crowd to look up his Twitter account.
I will sign two presidential orders to provide broader and faster and better internet coverage. Make sure you look up at Real Donald Trump, right?
I'm sorry, but it just strikes me as unpresidential to plug your social media accounts. He sounds like the end of a YouTube video. If you thought this speech was dope, please like and subscribe for more sick content. One of the details Trump's aides have repeated about him to show that he's mentally unfit for his job is his penchant for repeating the same handful of stories over and over. And yet again yesterday, he rambled on about his 2016 election victory and reminded the crowd of his position on guns.
We're restoring the rule of law and protecting our cherished Second Amendment.
Why are you making the hand motion? They know what you're talking about. The way Trump abuses the First Amendment makes me want to take advantage of the 21st Amendment. Trump is like a guy playing charades who doesn't realize he's not allowed to speak. Movie, two words, Star Wars. Boom, we did it. That was so fast. But it isn't just that Trump is growing increasingly erratic. He's also becoming more lawless. After repeatedly hectoring his Justice Department to investigate Hillary Clinton, it seems the DOJ is now doing exactly that. And on top of that, yesterday, the Trump administration announced that it was cruelly ending a humanitarian program that allowed 200,000 people from El Salvador to live here for more than a decade. He's working fewer hours and neglecting the basic responsibilities of his job, and yet he's still desperate for praise. In his speech yesterday, he rambled on about the election and his administration's attempts to roll back regulations and insisted to the audience that they were happy he won.
We're streamlining regulations that have blocked cutting-edge biotechnology, setting free our farmers to innovate, thrive, and to grow. Oh, are you happy you voted for me? You are so lucky that I gave you that privilege.
Ugh. He's so gross. I never thought I'd say this, but bring back Stephen Miller. This has been a closer look. Our guest is the best-selling author and Grammy-winning comedian. His stand-up special, Black to the Future, is available now. He's also about to kick off his new tour, The Joke's on Us. Please welcome back to the show the always hilarious Lewis Black, everybody. Welcome back.
Thank you.
How's your year been?
Oh, it's delightful so far.
Okay.
Just been a joy. It's been all 9 days of it have been a tapestry of turds.
Oh no.
Every day gets better and better, you know. When you start with a bombogenesis, because really what Weatherman needed to do was kind of really find words that we had never heard before to make things that are horrible seem worse. Really? Like, that made it seem worse than what it was. It was horrific. You don't need to come up with some stupid word for that. How come we never heard the word before?
Yeah.
These idiots are in the back room. Hey, what can we say to scare the hell out of them? And then you wake up, and then it's like, oh, a snow day, and the next day in this city, it's 10 degrees, right? But the wind chill, they say, it feels like zero. Well, then you know what? Then it's zero. Okay? That's what it is.
Yeah, right.
Because that's the deal. And you know, when it's below 10, then it's a snow, then it has to be like a snow day.
Right.
Why? Because you can't think. Nobody thinks when it's 10. Nobody has a thought. You don't walk down the street going, you know what I should do with my life? God, it's cold! That's why bears, which are idiots, they got a brain this big. They're smarter than we are.
Yeah.
They go, you know what? You know what I'm gonna do in this weather? I'm gonna go back to my cave. I'm gonna touch myself privately, not in front of anyone, just by myself. And then wake me up in 3 months.
So you were here right before the election. How do you feel like, how has the first year in office been for Trump for you?
It's been just a joy every day. I think he's really gotten it together, don't you?
Yeah, a lot of progress.
A lot of stuff's going on. A lot more interesting things than I'd expected, really. I can't do it. I can't keep up with it.
Yeah, it's hard.
Hard? You need a staff.
Yeah, it's true.
I don't remember what happened 2 days ago.
No, it moves really fast.
Fast? I came in and they were telling me stuff that happened this afternoon.
Yeah.
I didn't know, you know, I mean, here's what I think. When in today's news cycle, they announced that Oprah is thinking of running to be the president, well, that's what his presidency is like. That could be a part of the news cycle. Oprah is thinking, that's not news, okay?
that she had a thought isn't news. I'm not thinking of running. That's not news either.
Whether or not Oprah won, runs, it seems like one of the positive things that's maybe going to happen in 2018 is that more women are going to run. Do you think that's a good thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's huge.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think the men made much noise. Did you? Well, you better start making noise. Just pretend. Pretend, you idiots!
There they are.
No, it's, I think it's important. I think, I used to believe that because I'm a socialist, that we needed a third party and it should be a socialist party. And let me just say right now, don't write into Seth and say, boy, I can't believe he talked about socialism on TV. It's not his fault. Okay? And I'm ashamed of it. I know it's horrible that I'm someone who wants to share my stuff with others. It's terrible. It's terrible. Bad, Lewis. Bad. So then I thought it should be moderates, and now I do believe that the third party should be women. And I hope that's what happens. I hope it's a women's party. Because men have really proven in the course of my lifetime that we don't know what we're doing.
Yeah.
And we don't. We don't know how to govern ourselves. And women are more nurturing. So I think, men are pigs.
Yeah.
And so it's time that I think it should be about 60-40. 60% women, 40% men.
Yeah, that sounds right.
You know?
Great. I want to, but something else you actually asked for in 2011, you said in 2011, you did a piece on The Daily Show about how you thought Donald Trump should run for president because you thought we needed a third world dictator type president.
Yeah, back then.
Back then, yeah.
Back then!
And he reached out to you after you did this. Is this true?
Yeah, he called. His secretary called my assistant. And then my assistant got in touch with me and said, Donald Trump wants to talk to you. And I went, well, what? Why? and I thought, that's idiotic. What's he bothering me for? And so I said, okay. I thought about it. And I had a lot of stuff going on. I couldn't really. And I said, I can't talk to him now. And then after a couple of days, I realized I had no time to talk to him. And I'm just a comic. And I had no time to talk to him. He was supposed to be an entrepreneur with a TV show and all sorts of stuff going on. And apparently he had time to talk to me. I don't have time to talk to him. What's wrong with this picture? And then I thought, I don't want to talk to him because then, and this is what, it, this you see this now with him, that, you know, I didn't want to give him that sense of you're entitled because you pick up the phone, you get to talk to me.
So you never talked to him?
No!
Good. I'm so glad. And I'm so glad that you're back here. It's always such a pleasure to see you. Lewis Black, everybody, he's performing in Portland, Oregon, January 19th, and Seattle, January 20th and 21st.
Hey, I'm Eric Lederman, a producer here on Late Night. Lewis Black was on the show today, killed. And after the show, I sat down with him, and we caught up on some old times. And check it out. Here it is.
Let me just start with I met. We're rolling, right? Okay, I'm going to take over. So I met Eric about 108 years ago. He was 9, and he was working at The Daily Show. I don't know how he snuck in there, and he really, he was maybe an intern. Were you an intern?
I was a PA.
Yeah, whatever. He shouldn't have even been involved in this business.
I agree.
And we all liked him, much as you'd like a Dalmatian.
Is that your go-to dog breed?
No, that's actually I couldn't think of the other one, so I went to Dalmatian.
What's a dog breed? I'm just curious what you think is like a pit bull.
No, a dog breed would be a Doberman Pincher,
right?
Or one of those,
or a Lhasa Apso.
Yeah, or those cockapoodles.
Something that I was going to say with a poo at the end.
Yeah,
a mix of something where someone thought it was a great idea.
Yeah.
No, you know what's interesting about. I know you're joking. I know there's just so much affection for me when we see each other every 2 years. But the thing about Lewis, the thing about you at The Daily Show is that it was such a weird time, and it was the idea that the town, you kind of, you had an office there, right? You didn't?
But I've never
you were
had
there.
An office.
Oh, well, yeah, you're special. You came in with your for your special segments. I know.
I did. No,
I know. They brought out the secret weapons.
I was the Switzerland of the Daily Show.
Yeah, with no
read
opinion.
The book.
Who wrote that?
Read that oral history book.
I lived it for a year.
Well, read the book.
It did feel like even when you were around, everyone was so integrated there. I don't know if it was the time or I was just young, but like I remember like hanging out with Colbert, you just in a very casual way where I didn't have to. You know, we didn't have to worry about, like, what you thought of us. Like, if people were d-bags, you know, obviously, the talent, you're like, get out of here. But, like, everyone was very friendly, and I was surprised by it. I was so, like, just waiting to be spoken to. But everyone was very nice there at the end of the day. Politics aside and all the nonsense that went on, like, every show has their things. But, like, you were always very friendly to me. Still trying to figure out why, but...
No, it was a good group.
It was, right?
It was a very solid, humble... I mean, it was a humble... There's... Colbert, Carell,
Nancy.
You know, Nancy.
So nice to me. And I was like, oh, I couldn't believe how nice
it
was.
And they were great. It was a really good group to work with.
It was time, too. Like, it just, I remember, like, that's the first year, like, that we did the conventions, like 2000.
Yeah.
We did the Republican and Democratic conventions the first time, like, they traveled the show, right?
Yeah.
And it was like being established as a political show.
Yeah.
And we were all there and everyone was just in it together. It was fun. It was golden era.
And it was really fun. I've enjoyed it all. And it's been kind of interesting having Trevor there because he's been great to me.
Trevor's lovely, man.
And I'll be on tomorrow for those of you who are listening to this next Thursday.
Oh, yeah, when it comes out in 3 weeks, these guys turn
it'll
around.
Be good.
I want to talk about one of the things that you told me that always left an impression on me. I remember being there as a PA. This is like 2000 or something like that. Yeah, 99. Or yeah, right after college. It was really my first job. And you told me... I remember you were just talking and we were smoking cigarettes outside and I was like asking you just a couple of relatively nerdy questions. And then you told me like, yeah, I came into this late, you know, comedy, even though you had your, you know, career as a playwright and doing all that stuff before. But you basically told me, it's just like, don't worry about it. It's just like, I broke in this late. And I think that was, there was like two or three conversations I think I've had over like the, oh, really, what do I do? Like in the early part of my career. And you're just like, oh, for sake, just turn your brain off, just relax, look at me. And the self-deprecation was so great. And I'm just like, man, he's sucking down those cigarettes, he's on TV, like this guy knows what he's talking about. I need to call my mom and tell her to chill out. It was super inspiring, but it really was a helpful moment, whether or not you realize it or not. But it was.
No, that's great.
Yeah,
no,
we did a lot of drinking too that year, oddly enough. Yeah, that was a good time.
Well, no, but it was fun. I mean, but it was, you know, I learned, I mean, I kind of am always been about, there's a certain sense of mentoring that I've always felt. Because really, if I had a choice to, if I didn't do this, I would have been teaching. Because I've always felt that was the other thing.
After you just went to stand up, you feel like if stand up didn't work out, you would have called it at a certain time and then just gone right into teaching?
No, I would have stayed with theater.
Oh, you would have?
Yeah. But I would have taught within it.
Oh, okay.
I would have taught
subject matter.
Theater. Yeah.
Well, how do you feel about those that can't do teach? How do you feel about that? Because I always thought it was bullshit.
That's bullshit.
I did too.
No, that's.
I think it's bullshit.
But there is those who want to hurt. There is a group called those who want to hurt teach.
Right.
There's that group.
Because they're angry that they didn't make it whenever.
Yeah.
They did. Right.
Especially in our business.
Yes.
I can tell you my window.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And
please.
And I had a certain window when things could have. I did 3 movies in a year, and if I had wanted to,
give me the time. When is this?
When I did Accepted, and I did Unaccompanied Minors, and I did...
So we're talking like post, like early 2000s.
Yeah,
but
you know, I don't know the years. I don't remember.
I just want your people to really grasp them. I want to update your wiki page. Did you hear that? He shed all this new light about these movies.
I can't even remember the third movie.
Was it something with John or anything like that? Was it like Faculty or something?
No, God, no. I wouldn't appear in that piece of shit.
John's really funny about that.
No, no. It was Unaccompanied. I can't believe I don't remember the name of the movie. I did 3 movies. There was just a section there where I could have gotten a different... I could have moved to L.A. I could have gotten a different manager.
I could have
gotten a different agent. I could have done this and this and this.
Sure.
And you have your time frame. And that was my time frame. And I just didn't. And I chose, I'd rather write at that point. I had the opportunity to go write. And that's really what I.
For yourself.
Was my main passion. But I mean, I wrote my books at that point. And so walked away in a sense. I was lucky enough to be able to do that. But that's what that time frame gave me, as opposed to kind of pushing to get more work or pushing to get a show.
Right. Now, don't you think, though, that you made those decisions not just because, like, you're a diehard New Yorker and you've been here on the East Coast most of your life, but because you came into a good degree of success later in life?
Yeah.
Do you think if that would have happened earlier, you would have probably opted to do the thing that everyone does, like, I'm going to L.A., like, on a magic carpet and, like, going for it in the West Coast?
I never liked L.A.
No one likes visiting L.A. If you have to really, like, commit and go there and then decide. I think.
I can't do it.
You can't.
No, I always felt it was the creepiest place I've ever been on earth.
Were you pressured to do that, like from your reps and stuff? To
no.
Like, you weren't?
No.
And they you should really go and try
no,
it.
No, I would okay. never. No. And I had friends who lived there. I mean, I had friends who were very successful there.
Yeah, who transitioned from New York.
Yeah.
Relocated,
did really
say.
Well there. You know, one of my closest friends was Marklin Baker. He was hugely successful
yeah,
there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I just thought, and I have always felt, I mean, I would drive around there and I would say, and I always thought there was something creepy about it. And I always had this feeling that like over those mountains, a giant dinosaur could appear. And I would look and go, I would literally turn to whoever was driving. I told you that was going to happen.
Those are your last words?
Yeah.
That's the most New York thing you've said. Will you tell us quickly about that project that you're working on so people can know what you're up to? About this other potential doc you're doing?
Oh, I'm doing a documentary about this place that I worked at for when I first came to New York, called the West Bank Cafe. I worked there for 9 years as a playwright there, and I ran it with two friends of mine. It was a composer, and the other was a director, and it's about all of the work we did. We did more new American one-act plays than any theater in the United States.
That's fantastic.
Nobody cared, to the interest of absolutely no one.
Well, now people on Netflix are going to care if it goes your way, right?
You want to try to sell it and get it out. If I can figure out, once again, it's the, you know, in the end, you have to figure out what do you suck. And
you heard it here first. Breaking news right now. And everyone's going to be waiting to find out which
it is. It all boils down to which do you suck, and I've never been right.
If this is the last interview you do, man, I hope it's not, but this is going to be iconic. We're going to establish you, like cement you.
Oh, it's perfect. And that would be the thing. That should be on my tombstone.
That's it. I see
on my third tombstone. Which he didn't know which to suck. It was that next to my other thing, which is what I wanted, what I really want more than anything, is that I want a giant mausoleum. And
oh, okay.
In the mausoleum is all those tech pieces of shit that people want, but I get it first. I'm completely dead, and yet inside of my tomb, people come and go, what's the next big thing? And a dead man's got it. That's what I want.
So we'll be heads. When you croak, we'll be sure to do a follow-up to this podcast. Let everyone know where you're buried.
Yep.
Because everyone's going to love to visit your grave, I'm sure.
And they're going to try to get in, and it's going to be guards there.
Yeah.
So don't think you're going to get into it. I got enough to set aside to keep you pricks out.
Oh, so much money. So much money just rolling in.
Yeah.
From the stock you're doing, that's your whole plan, right?
Yeah,
the last act.
That's my last act. Boy, that documentary, Hand Over Fist, they call it. Boy, you make a documentary. You kids out there. You're looking for a moneymaker. You make a documentary.
Make a documentary.
Yeah, it's a license to print money.
Well, you continue to inspire, motivate the next generation on this podcast format. You're crossing boundaries, and it's great to see you.
It's great to see you.
You crushed the interview. It was awesome. And thanks, everyone, for listening. This is a Late Night Seth Meyers podcast. Eric Lederman, Lewis Black. Bye.
Want more Late Night with Seth Meyers? Be sure to follow the handle @LateNightSeth on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. You can also watch full episodes of Late Night at LateNightSeth.com or on the NBC app. And please tell your friends who are fans of Seth Meyers to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding in your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.